The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
This week in Retronauts, the revenge of Retro equals Nauts. Hello, welcome back to Retronauts, and we're here for our second dose of Golden Axing. You thought we were done, but we just got right back on the chicken leg. That's a very funny joke if you know what a chicken leg is. Here we are again. I don't think there's any point in doing a preamble. You know what we're talking about. So let's just introduce everyone who's here. What would be the best way to do this? Let's go over to Japan first. Who's here from Japan?
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everyone. This is Diamond Fight, and for today, I am a genderless horse person.
Is horse person the correct term there, do you think?
All I'm saying, we'll get to it later.
Oh, okay.
Apparently centaur is apparently a gendered term, so...
Oh, I see. Okay, well, that's interesting. We'll learn more about this later. And I was about to say the next place we're going to go over, but I don't actually know where everyone is right now. So let's just go in alphabetical order from now on. So who else is with us today?
It would be me, John Lindeman from Digital Foundry, the official death subtractor for this episode.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
So, and who will you be bringing back to life today?
We're going to find out, won't we?
Oh, I'm excited. And who else is joining us today to bring, not that's not to say bring up the rear, but that sounds so rude, doesn't it? To ride the beast.
It's a bit. Okay. So it's finally Thomas Nickel, and I am ready to use this gold opportunity to ask some serious questions.
That's really good. Well done. This, you know, everyone's jokes were fantastic today. Well done, everyone. That's a big applause. Let's
thank you.
Come on.
It's, you say know, that. You say that, yet mine didn't confused you. So I don't know.
Well, that's just a stupid yeah, problem. Though,
it's so. It's challenging comedy. That's what comedy's supposed to do. It's supposed to challenge you.
I'm punching up at the Horse People Society.
yeah. You're not supposed to do that. It's spooksome. Now, last time I believe we ended up covering the Mega Drive and Master System and Game Gear games, and today we're going somewhat off the beaten track, although there is also another Mega Drive game, so I don't know why I said that. But chronologically, we begin in 1992 when we're heading back to the old coin ops, to the old arcade now.
And 92, what a year that was for games, right? 92,
hell of a year. Best times. Hell of a year.
Yeah.
Sonic Spinball. Oh, that might be 93, actually.
That would have been 93. That was Sonic Damn. 2 was that year. No, this was
in that case.
just to put it into perspective here, 1992 had games like, you know, Street Fighter 2, on consoles and such. You had The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, Assault Suits Vulcan, Street Fighter 2.
There's Thunder Force 4.
Thunder Force 4, of course. Sonic the Hedgehog 2, as we noted. This was kind of just the year, like, I feel like the Mega Drive is really coming into its own. I think Dragon Quest 5 came out that year.
That's a good one.
In Japan, it was also the first year of Kirby. So the first Kirby's Dream Land came out that year. Which is quite something.
Hell yeah, they're both of a legend.
Right? So.
Mortal Kombat as well.
And there's just a ton of other stuff happening as well.
Yeah, I think that was the year that Chuck Rock was released on the Mega Drive, which was huge, obviously.
Ooh. Big game, yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, I wanted to put all those other games into perspective because, you know, they're all fine.
No, you're right. I mean, that was also the year we got, I think, Ernest Evans, you know?
Oh, hell yeah.
I know everybody's
that whip. Holy crap.
Deep into that.
But what did come out this year that we're all extremely excited about, which was Golden Axe, The Revenge of Death Adder.
Adder.
Thank you for that.
Real banger, this one.
Oh, it's crazy good. Yes, and yet you cannot play it. Well, you can, but you cannot play it very easily by comparison to many of these other games.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem there is that, you know, what we just said, like, fighting games are exploding. Like, Street Fighter 2 has been out for a solid year, so at this point you're starting to see the Street Fighter 2 wannabes are coming up, and of course, Mortal Kombat, not a wannabe, but definitely its own thing.
Right.
But that's also exploding. So I feel like beat 'em ups, you know, like the original Golden Axe, are not out yet. Like, certainly there's still plenty of fine beat 'em ups coming in the early 90s. But certainly the moment of the beat 'em up has passed a little bit, and everyone's excited about fighting games, which is why I don't remember seeing this one in many arcades, if at all. And maybe that's also why it got no home port. So for many years, it was arcade only, you know?
Yeah. It is on the Astro City Mini, but I'm not sure if that's even still a thing you can get, like, new. I don't know if they've stopped producing it or.
I'm sure you can still find it, but yeah, it was on there. And I think that was the only time it actually came home, right?
Every single week, I cross my fingers and I'm like, this is the week that Hamster are going to release this on Arcade Archives, but it's never
Hamster
happened.
Hamster does not do Sega, right?
It sucks. They really need to do Sega.
I do think it's fair to point out that this period of time was so interesting because, like Diamond said, like, fighting games were becoming, they were just starting to take off thanks to Street Fighter, right? This was the year Street Fighter came home, obviously Mortal Kombat and all that starting to take off.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a ton of brawlers hitting the arcades. And home consoles, right? This was the year of Streets of Rage 2, like I said. You know, you had Irem doing stuff like Undercover Cops, which is awesome. Konami's Asterix game, which basically does for Asterix what, you know, they did for The Simpsons, right? They did the big X-Men arcade game with the six players and everything in there. You had the amazing Bucky O'Hare game. I think that was the arcade game that came out that year,
hell
right?
Oh, yes.
Which is so freaking good.
Oh, I love it to death. Fuck your hair episode in the future. Count on it.
So, like, you could see all these, and there's a ton more. All the brawlers that were hitting this time were, like, really, like, both gameplay and visually, like, kind of technically advanced. Like, the genre had been advanced in this point. It's just that it was no longer as popular as it had been prior, thanks to the rise of one-on-one fighters.
But I think, John, what you're onto something there in that most of the games from this year that we remember, you know, that made an impact, had some kind of hook.
Yes. You know, exactly.
You know, graphically, that obviously that'd be graphically impressive, which I would say this is Golden Axe, yeah. Revenge of Death Adder is very visually impressive, but it is still at the end of the day a two player game, whereas you know X-Men, depending on the size of the cabinet, was 4 or 6 players. You know, Konami already had several 4-player games out there, and they would have 4-player games coming. You know, Capcom, I don't think ever had the 4-player, but they were doing other games that were very big, very loud.
I'm sorry. Did you ever see Taito's Riding Fight?
Riding Fight?
Yeah.
Is that like, dude, are you riding horses?
So it's, okay, imagine it's F-Zero, except for you're a dude riding a hoverboard, and you're like zipping around like 3D Mode 7 style, like, stages while beating up dudes. Like it's extremely cool, and it's way over the top, and again it has a hook for it, right? Because it's like it's 3D into the screen, riding around on hoverboards, like beating up dudes on hoverboards with baseball bats.
I think I've played
can
this.
You get this on the Egret?
I don't know.
I think it's on one of the add-on cards.
It might be,
John, is that the one where the first boss is a huge guy with 2 chainsaws and it's like neon crap all over the place? Because if it is, it's the
one where at the end there's that big crash and there's the big wrestling looking dude with like the flame looking vest and he hops all around.
Yeah, I think I know the one you mean. It looks a little bit like Neon Knight Riders from Turtles.
The second one's like starts out on the water.
Yeah,
dude,
this game is dope.
See, we're digging the hole here because there's zero hoverboards in Golden Axe or Revenge of Death Adder. You can ride several different animals, including a skeleton monster, but there's no hoverboards. You know what I mean? Children of the 90s demanded hoverboards, and Golden Axe did not offer this. So that's one strike against it.
That's what killed its console part, probably. That's what killed it.
This one has your branching paths, right? Unlike the previous. But so it's possible there is a hoverboard that we haven't found, but I don't think there is.
No, it's been
34 years, Stu. I think we would have found it by now.
I really like your point on this, Diamond. You're absolutely right. Golden Axe, the Revenge of Death Adder, unlike many of the other brawlers that year, really just didn't do anything new. And I think it just did classic brawling really well. And I actually think this could have been a real star if it had released instead on like the Genesis/Mega Drive. But in the arcade, it was too late.
But then I want to ask one question about that. How can you port this to the Mega Drive back in 92 or 93?
I think you
would have to water it down a lot. It would really lose a lot in the porting process.
But if they
weren't willing to shell out for a really big cartridge.
So what I'm saying more is, like, rather than making this an arcade game, they should have just focused maybe on making it a Mega Drive game from the beginning.
Yeah.
But that's not what we got.
They had another project for that. We'll get to that.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if we're not familiar with this, as we've said, it's a brawler, much like 1 and 2, but I don't know how to describe it. I don't like using this because it's quite cliche, but it's kind of like that up to 11. It's kind of on roids. It's like everything's crazily. The exact moment I knew I loved this game was first time I played it, and I have to admit it was on MAME, and yes, I did delete the ROM, but once you get to, I think the first enemies, I thought, I'm going to do the magic and see what this looks like. Holy shit, there's a close-up of a guy getting his face incinerated off. It's one of the most metal things I've ever seen in my entire life. I couldn't believe it. I was, like, not expecting that in the slightest, and I was immediately just like, okay, Golden Axe, Revenge of Death Adder. Okay.
Yeah, they simplified the system. They simplified the system, which I think was smart, because, you know, the original game, the more potions you collected, the bigger the spell you could cast, and that also meant a lot of different sprites. Like, oh, what is this going to do? What is this going to do? In this game, it's much simpler in that everyone has one spell. You only cast one spell, but you can stock up a lot more potions. So you can build up a stock of, you might have enough potions to cast the same spell 2 or even 3 times if you're really a big hoarder. And so it just means you get one effect, but that one effect, like Stu mentioned, is really goddamn cool. So it's like, okay, this is my move. I'm going to whip it out at the right moment, and if I store up my potions, I'll whip it out again on the same boss, and they will be toasty, and I will love it.
I felt like the previous games, the magic did have some sort of cool effects, but never felt too strong, because the enemies would usually get back up again. But in this, it's like, nah, your face is off, mate. Forget it. Crazy.
Well, everything's so big here. Everything is so big. The characters, the characters are very large. The variety within the enemies, I think, is much larger than Golden Axe 1. I feel like Golden Axe 1, especially late in the game, it basically became, oh, here are those guys you fought a dozen times, but now they're all black, or now they're all gold, or now they're like, they have dark eyes. Where it's like, this one, you've got like regular soldiers, you've got tree people, you've got like Mudman Polynesian people with giant masks on. You know, like I said, we've got lots of different creatures you can ride. You've siege equipment that you can carry, like on the side, like a weapon you can fire in addition to your other weapons. Everything is just massive and big and very, very in your face. It's really like, it's an eye grabber. It really is. And it's just, you know, we only speculate and as to why it didn't make a bigger impression, but.
There's one more thing. It's also new because it isn't just a rehash of Golden Axe 1. You have four new characters, all of whom haven't appeared before. I mean, the main barbarian is the same archetype, but it's another guy. And the rest is really, really new in this case.
You're absolutely right. But I kind of want to at least sort of explain the state of, like, the hardware and its place in the arcade, right? Because this is Sega. This is 1992. This game was created for what's called the System 32 board. This is Sega's final 2D focused arcade board. And it was quite capable. This is the same board that the first Jurassic Park arcade game ran on.
Oh, wow.
Have you guys ever played that? Which is like a pseudo 3D sprite based like rail shooter.
Yeah, that's a hell of a look at that one.
Right? So this thing is extremely capable. And it's a 32-bit system. And I feel like the System 32 kind of sets the stage for what Sega Saturn would be able to do from a 2D perspective. Mm. And I kind of feel like this is the target they were looking at when building the Saturn. But that same year, Sega unleashed the Sega, wasn't called this at first, but it's the Model 1 board, the CG board, with Virtua Racing. And the success of Virtua Racing sent the industry and Sega down the road of 3D polygon graphics, and they really never looked back after this. And so Death Adder was kind of like one of the last, not the last, but they still did a few more games on the System 32, but it was like their last big splash at doing a 2D pixel art sort of arcade game like this that doesn't do any, it's not trying to be weird or 3D or isometric or do anything like that. It's just straight up, this is 2D pixel art, and now we can throw around a huge number of sprites. There's tons of frames of animation. There's just so much detail in the background, the characters, everything. It's like Sega and 2D basically at its best.
Jonathan, I just want to point out, John, I think this is significant. Looking at the list of System 32 games, most of these games, by my memory, were arcade only, you know?
Correct.
Like Spider-Man, that weird Spider-Man brawler, that never got a home port. Arabian Fight with those giant, like, anime-style Arabian Nights characters.
Oh, wow, that was that,
like,
as well, okay.
Yeah, these are very good-looking arcade games, but also, clearly Sega either didn't know or didn't figure it was worth the budget it would take to bring them to home in some fashion or other. So, like, a lot of these games just remained in our arcades.
Yeah, you know, again, it's a timing, I think, just. Consoles aren't ready for that. Console can't do that. When the consoles came out to do that, the Saturn and so on, the games were old already and out of people's minds, and people wanted Virtua Fighter and more of that. So I think the timing did them a disservice.
Mm-hmm. Was it the same board that did that Sega Sonic the Hedgehog?
It was the same board. It was also the same board that did Hard Dunk.
Oh, Hard Dunk, yeah.
Which, you know, everybody's into.
Oh yeah, we're all like, we all love a Hard Dunk.
Hard weekend, Dunk. Aren't we? No, yeah. This board was awesome. The games that ran on it, I think most would agree, largely looking like when you look at something like Outrunners from 1992, that is just, it's still beautiful to this day. Just the amount of sprites and the 3D effect that it pulls off. And then that actually did get a port to the Sega Mega Drive Genesis, and it's horrible in comparison.
It's on 3DS, isn't it? Outrunners. There was like a 3D version of it.
Oh, that's a Turbo Outrun on 3DS.
Oh, my bad. Sorry.
Outrunners is the one that was like the two player one. And unfortunately, we didn't really get that at home in a good quality, I would say.
Yeah.
But, so that's kind of the nature. Like, this was like, the year where 2D was starting to fade out. And yeah, there were still fighting games that were taking off, and Capcom would embrace 2D for many, many years to come. But this is kind of like where 3D polygon games really started picking up steam, and Sega was like, yeah, this is what we can do now. And that's what the masses wanted. Which brings me to this next question then, before we get into more details about the game. Who here played Golden Axe, The Revenge of Death Adder in an arcade at the time of release?
Oh, God, no.
I don't think I ever saw one. I really don't.
Never even saw it, no.
So that,
yeah.
I never saw an arcade back in the day.
Oh, well, okay.
All the arcades in Britain, all the arcades in Britain were still full of 80s machines.
We had a ton of arcade games around us, like huge arcades. So some of the biggest around, this is a game I never saw. This is just not what arcade operators wanted in 1992. And I really think that kind of killed, that really kind of made it feel like the series was kind of on the way out. Sega didn't know what to do with it at this point. Nobody was that interested in it. I think a lot of us, not everyone, but a lot of us just kind of discovered it much later.
Yes, I certainly did. Yeah, I think it was through Hardcore Gaming 101 that I found out about this. Or it may have just been random main browsing. I was like, what is this? It must be Golden Axe 2. Oh no, it's amazing.
Yeah, I was like,
and it bums me out because like, I don't want to get all like into it, but like Golden Axe, I think people have nostalgia for, but it's one of those things where it's often couched with, "Yeah, but Streets of Rage is better." And like, nobody's played this, and if they had, that would be very different. Like, this is an amazing. I mean, look, I think this is the best one of the lot. I don't know if everyone agrees about that.
I could agree.
I mean, it's not my favorite. My favorite's still one because of the sheer nostalgia for it, but this is the best playing game in the series for me.
Yep.
And I wish it was more well known. I wish it was available somehow on a collection or something outside of the Astro City Mini, which is, I mean, I think it's on like an arcade one up as well, but who has, I can't afford that.
No, I didn't want to afford that.
Well, I figured by owning the Astro City Mini that it opens me up to being able to play this freely on MAME without any guilt.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I'm not a lawyer, but yes.
And as a former owner of the Astro City Mini. Yeah, as a
there we go.
I used to have an Astro City Mini, so I guess that still kind of counts a bit. But, yeah, if they're not going to make it, like, available for me to buy over here, I think it's fine. But I urge all of you to go and play this, because you will go, hey, this is really good.
Yep.
You will agree.
Yep.
I had one of my favorite gaming memories is playing this on multiplayer with a friend and us both just kind of yelling at the screen at all the crazy shit that happens at the end. Not that I really want to spoil it, but that's got a hell of an ending, this game, I'll tell you. It's one of the dopest things I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and I really enjoy that, you know, you have four characters to choose from this time, and yeah, sure, the first two are basically the same, you know, you got a barbarian guy, and you have, like, this lady who might be an elf, I'm not sure what her exact deal is, but then you have Goa.
You're mixing that up, sorry. The elf isn't a lady, right? It's this little boy guy.
Yeah, Trix is
Trix.
A kid.
With a spiky hair.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's not a lady. My apologies. But you have Goa, who is a giant with a dwarf riding on his back. You know, like Tecmonite or whatever.
Right.
And then you have Dora, who I'm going to call Lady Centaur. I looked it up. Again, Centaur is a gendered term. There's actually a different term for a feminine horse person. But I'm not going to bother saying it because, let's be honest, Lady Centaur makes more sense. So, yeah. And what's really funny is if she rides a creature, somehow she loses two legs and just rides it normally. I don't know how she does this, but that's we're ignorant to the ways of the Lady Centaur.
I really wish we could have seen
it's a centaur thing. They don't talk about it.
I want to see the full four legs riding another creature, though. I'm sad we didn't get that. The technology wasn't there. We needed the system.
John,
64.
There's websites for that, really.
Is Goa the giant, though, with the wolf on his back? Is that Gilius, or is that another
dwarf? Yeah.
That is actually Gilius on his back.
It's Gilius, yeah.
Oh, that's dope.
Just gotten a bit old. I think the new one plays a long, long time after the first one. Gilius is around, the rest is dead.
I gotta tell you though, even if you don't play this, please watch a long play of it or look up the ending because it's so fucking cool. Like, it's just like, oh, it's this, that was so good.
It's funny, Thomas, you mentioned the Trix characters, sort of that, and I always kind of like equated them to Eddie Hunter or Skate from Streets of Rage 2. As just
in
like,
way,
they got the, yeah, they got the young kid who's kind of like with cool or something, you know, it's either spiky hair, the baseball cap, and it's just like, it feels like that was like the move to make in these like second entries for these types of
games.
But
he also has a very cool special move because he is the guy who can replenish your health.
Right. That is a good point.
So he's a pretty strong ally if you got him along with you.
Oh man, what a game. Actually, this would have been so cool if this had been four player at least. And I feel like that may have made a big difference in terms of
getting audiences
in. Cause X-Men came out that year, like I said, right? And like people remember that, even though it's not the best brawler, arguably.
Well, it's the site. I mean, that was everywhere over here as well. X-Men.
Yeah, it was popular as heck.
Huge. Like, you'd never get a go on it cause it was always busy. I guess it's the whole thing of bringing in different demographics with, like, the different characters being from different sort of types.
Did you ever see, from 1991, Taito also put out Warrior Blade, Rastan Saga Episode 3, which was also a brawler, but that used their super ultra-wide format, you know, like for they did for, like, Darius.
Oh, yes, for Darius.
So it's it's like an ultra-wide brawler from 1991. How freaking sick.
You know, John, I realize we've brought up more than once, but I think we should point out there was a four-person version of this game. Oh. So
you could potentially play it. There was a four-player version of this game?
Oh. You can find pictures of it online. Again,
I've never seen that in my life. What the heck?
Yeah, we don't know what the – I mean, I guess it makes sense because if he was a conversion kit from, say, like Spider-Man, because Spider-Man was also four players. Hmm. But again, I never saw this machine in person, so
– That's neat.
You know?
Yeah, I had no idea that existed whatsoever.
Wow. That would be really fun to have. Yeah, you're right. Look at that.
If I was a millionaire, I'd be off to one of those, I'll tell you.
Well, then I stand corrected. That would have... Man, so that kind of brings up the question. What the heck happened with the distribution around this game? Was it just like nobody wanted it or Sega wasn't really selling it that much? Or
I do wonder if maybe the fact that it is Golden Axe and everyone was just like, nah, that's old stuff. You know,
I really, really wonder.
Mortal Kombat's new hotness.
I mean, again, yeah, you have fighting games where people are fighting each other. It's two player. It's a lot more coins coming in and out. And true. By this point, like I said, if you're using the same board, using the same hardware from other games, like did Spider-Man, you know, how many Spider machines were still active? You know, it could have been. There's a million reasons it could have happened, but I just
that. Diamond, that Spider-Man game, I gotta mention this because this is the only chance I'm gonna get. I love the way he walks in that game. Like, he's just chill. Like, he's just like, yeah, it's cool. I'm Spider-Man. Whatever.
It's a wonderful game.
What a weird game. It's such an odd game, but I really like it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. You fight like Venom like four times in the first 10 minutes.
And when you put a coin in, it goes, Spider-Man! Which is
that's
great.
That's the best.
It's just, there's something about how chill he is in that game. I always think of him as doing like a Todd McFarlane pose, but in that, he's just standing there, slightly slouched over.
He's like super tall and lanky.
He's just going for a bagel. Yep. He's like, I'm just going to go for a little stroll around the block. Oh, it's the Hobgoblin. Hey, buddy. I don't know. I think it's great. I would love to see those games get a little bit of a renaissance, you know, but it seems like almost a lost...
Maybe we need a System 32 collection, you know?
it almost seems like a lost world of Sega because they're so I want to say prolific putting all their stuff out. Of course, they have taken all their things away again and put them back in the box, but who knows why they're doing that. I suppose some people probably do know. What else do we have to say about Golden Axe Revenge of Deathadder other than it rules and everyone should play it?
Well, I mean, one thing, of course...
It's got some good FM music.
It also has some amazing riding animals, I think. I really like that that mantis that bites into the enemy's head. It's
really nasty. That's great.
With a chomping effect and everything. Good stuff.
I mean, I think fundamentally, you know, if you've played Golden Axe 1 and 2, this just feels so drastically different. Like, those games are very, very rigid, right? For better or for worse, that's how they are. They're very rigid. This one is not. It just feels like a much more modern take. Like, Golden Axe 1 and 2 feel like a creation of Sega from the 8-bit era. Like, I know that those aren't 8-bit. It's like Master System era. Like, it's 80s Sega. This feels like 90s Sega, if you know what I mean.
Would it be fair to say there's a sort of, when it comes to brawlers, there's kind of pre-final fight and then post-final fight? I don't know.
I've always kind of felt that's similar. I mean,
yeah. Because, like, obviously this is post-final fight and it's got influence from that, as does everything. But for me, it's just so much more organic to play it. You don't, as you say, it's not rigid as much. There's no stiffness. It's just a real, it's just beautiful, beautiful, coherent, like, graphics. The music is good. The power of everything. Like I say, it all goes up to 11. It's just so much more intense than Golden Axe 1 or 2, as much as I do love those games for nostalgic reasons.
But, you know, there's another big difference between 1 and 2 and this one, I think, because this one isn't like a copy of Conan the Barbarian anymore. This is its own thing now.
Yeah. That's a good point.
1 and 2, basically, they were Conan, right? The music is Conan. Axe Battler is Conan, Sonya is Red Sonya, and Tyrus is Red Sonya, and so on, you know. The new one is its own thing, finally. I mean, there's a bit of more anime in there, I guess. But it has a new identity at this point.
Yeah, I can agree with that, but maybe that's part of the problem.
And it's just a huge shame that it's a real shame that it's not more accessible, you know.
It's not even on a Yakuza game, you know.
Yeah, that's a point. They could put it in one of those, couldn't they?
Yeah, but I don't think they put any System 32 game in one of these, right?
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah.
They'll put a bunch of like Mark III games in there, but they won't, and Sonic the Fighters, but they won't put in Gold Axe. Revenge of Death Adder. It's a shame. I'd like to see a new Golden Axe collection with a bunch, like maybe from M2 or something. They did one, didn't they? On the Xbox.
They could do Golden Axe Revenge of Death Adder 2.
Yeah. Oh, that would be dope, yeah.
The Revenge Year.
The Revenge Year.
So, I feel like we're done with singing the praises of that one, that brilliant game.
I think we might mention one more point maybe quickly, because we noted down there in the notes that the Western version is again a bit different from the Japanese original, because you have to play through every stage and you can't really choose the path there.
Oh, right. That doesn't sound as good.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds a bit annoying.
Why must they do these things?
I think it's for money. But that might be just my, that might be a hunch.
Interesting stuff. But all right, so that was, I guess, it's not the last time that Golden Axe would grace the arcade, but it is the last time we'd see a proper Golden Axe brawler in the arcade, that's for sure.
Yeah. Though, next up, in 1990...
That's got to be controversial now.
Oh, man.
Vaguely, I would say. Now, in 1993, on the Mega Drive, we saw... Well, I say we saw. I'm not sure this ever hit Europe, did it? I'm not sure.
Didn't.
Never. Only in Japan on cartridge, we had Golden Axe 3, you know, numbered sequel, the follow-up to Golden Axe 2, which also did see a brief release on the Sega Channel. Was it translated, or was it never in Japanese in the first place? I'm not sure. I remember playing this in English.
There's English text in there. It's like you're supposed to go get the Golden Axe, so...
Yeah, it's not that necessary, I suppose. But yes, Golden Axe 3, pretty hard to get originally. You can get it now. You can get it now. Again, they've withdrawn it, but the Sega Mega Drive Classics Genesis Classics. I'm not sure if you can still buy it now, or by the time this goes out, you probably can't, but they'll probably have got a new collection out of some sort, because it's Sega. It's accessible, is the point. And this is a more, fairly traditional sort of follow-up to Golden Axe 2 with some knobs on. I have to admit, I don't particularly love this one, but I feel like I might be alone in that. So, how do we feel about this one, folks?
I think it's the best one on the Mega Drive, and it's not even close, which is the controversial statement.
I think I'd be hard pressed to disagree with that, but because my love for those old games, as I've mentioned a couple of times, really is based on nostalgia. I think in terms of gameplay, this is pretty easily the most effective one. Yeah.
So, fundamentally, I don't have nostalgia for this game, really. I did actually have a friend named Chris who had the Sega Channel, so I knew that this kind of thing existed, but I really don't have nostalgia for it. I didn't play it till much, much later, and I finally got a cartridge version and spent a good amount of time with it. And I was always, I can understand why people may have been down on it. It has issues, and some limitations, but I think the core nugget of gameplay here is so strong. This is essentially like an upgrade on par with like Streets of Rage 3 or Bare Knuckle 3, I guess I would rather say, in terms of like improving the core mechanics over prior games. So fundamentally it is a similar model to the last two on the Mega Drive. You know, there's multiple paths that you can choose through between different levels. You've got four characters, a little different this time as well, such as the, what was it? The Panther guy, Kronos.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Kronos Evil Raid.
Finally, someone for the furries. I love it.
So, but the main difference this time is that I feel like the overall moveset is more nuanced and complex, but also in a way, like Streets of Rage 2, there's like double tap moves and different types of jumps, and there's just more you can do with each character. And it also feels more, just snappier in a way that kind of like the arcade game did, the previous one, Revenge of Death Adder, where just moving around, you know, engaging with enemies feels better.
It also feels more classic, I think. It feels more like a normal brawler because the weapons have less range in this one.
They do. And
so you have to get in closer to the enemy.
And connecting feels really good, I think, too. Like the actual, the hit stutters, everything about it feels great.
Yeah.
Now, some have pointed out that the graphics can be a bit grainy at points, and they were limited to a 4 megabit cartridge. I do think there's still a fair few number of stages that look excellent. And unlike the earlier two games, there's actually a lot of parallax scrolling, including line scrolling.
I think that is what saves the look of the game.
Right?
So the parallax scrolling is just the trade-off we got for the sort of grainy, tiley graphics. So exactly. If you're parallax, it looks really great.
Exactly, and I think that...
Like the cornfields and stuff like that.
Yeah, because like Golden Axe 1 and 2 on the Mega Drive really don't do that. Like they're just like these static screens that it just never felt alive. Yeah. This has so much more going on in the backgrounds. And they're able to throw a fair amount of enemies around the screen, and the game just runs smoothly throughout it. And on top of all that, I think the soundtrack here is underrated and one of the best on the system.
I agree completely. So I played it this morning. I played it this morning, and what struck me was the quality of the music over everything else. It was outstanding.
Dude, when that first stage kicks in, you're just like, oh man, let's go. Or that like that jungle level where it's just man, it's so good. It's the same I'm blanking on his name, but the composer that did work on Sonic CD and also the Hybrid Front. So he knows what's up.
Yeah, name escapes me. I know I'm a bit down on it. I do agree with everything you're saying. My issue with this game is more, on one hand, I think the sprites aren't as good as they are in 1 and 2. The fantasy quality of it, I just think the sprite work isn't there. The backgrounds are fantastic. I don't like the sprites personally, but it's just me. And I also think that it's a bit repetitive, and it scrolls very slowly and it doesn't feel very dynamic for me. That said, you know, it may be one of those games where one day I figure out some inputs I don't know about or something and I go, oh, wait, this is great. But, I didn't love it. I just thought it was kind of good. You know, I thought it was kind of fun, but not fun enough for me. I wasn't crazy about it. It's in the note. Sorry.
Sorry, please go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, we have it here that, you know, it compares unfavorably against Streets of Rage 2, which I think it does.
I think that's
a little bit, like, I don't want to say apples and oranges, but nothing compares favorably with Streets of Rage 2.
Right.
So you got to take it as it comes. I do agree that it isn't a bad game. It's just, I got a little bit like, oh, I'm still in this jungle. I'm still in this bit. This is really going on a long, long time. So I did get a bit bored with it.
It's also It's a quite brown game in many levels. You have to admit that.
It is cool.
There's some blue skies and there's some other colors in there and some green. And the thing I like about this though is I always felt like in the original, you just have to like take out enemies kind of like one after the other. And there's not really much you can do to speed it up, where I feel like here there's enough moves now. Like a skilled player can actually progress through the stages faster than an unskilled one. So it actually kind of rewards you understanding the game in a way that good brawlers offer, which I found really engaging.
I'd say that because it has a reputation, and I would say that's probably unfair and probably from people who didn't really give it much of a chance, because it was positioned as a throwaway, because it didn't have a sort of solo release, it's positioned on a list of games you can play on a compilation. And with those sort of instances, it's very easy to play it for a minute, not really get it, and go, nah, this sucks, next game. And I feel like that may have been a sort of a casualty of that in the modern sort of day. It's worth playing for the music and the visuals, I would say, if nothing else. But
yep.
I recall back then when it came as an import, the press pretty much hated it, in Germany at least.
Yeah.
Got bad reviews all over the place. And of course, also, let's keep in mind, if you want the card today, it's really expensive. Not one of the really big hitters, but I think you will pay something in the above 100 or so.
Yeah, it's above 100
if you want a complete copy nowadays.
I would call it a victim of bad timing. You know, it's the original Japanese release is 1983. It didn't show up overseas until 1995, which is definitely late for a game of this type. You know, I think at first glance, someone might look at this and say, oh, yeah, I played Golden Axe. I played Golden Axe 2. Oh, it's Golden Axe 3. Okay, great. But I would say that if you actually sit down and play it and spend time with it, I think it's better than Golden Axe 2 for sure, at least Mega Drive-wise. But, again, today, 30 years later, if you look at Golden Axe games as a whole, like, this doesn't compare with Revenge of Deathadder. So it's like, in that regard, today, it's kind of a harder sell. But it's like, if you can put your mindset of, okay, let's look at the Golden Axe games that you could play at home in the early 90s, this was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just...
I want to note real quick, though I didn't like, as I mentioned, I wasn't crazy about the sprite work, but I want to say I have only ever played this on an HDTV, not a CRT. And I bet this looks way better. I mean, everything looks better on CRT, but you know how it is.
Yeah.
So I don't want to criticize it for that without seeing the way it was intended to actually look. You know, I tried to get a cartridge of this, but I really couldn't afford it. So that was really out of my price range, unfortunately.
So another thing I want to add, though, is I feel like this game has a few cool set pieces and some level variety that the other ones didn't necessarily have on Genesis. Like first stage alone, right? After that initial part, you drop down into that cart. You're being pulled by those creatures, the ones you could ride originally, right? The bone cart, right? And that's like, okay, that's cool. But then there's other levels, like there's the one where you end up climbing sort of this mountain. And so it's got these like vertical sections where you're going up these slopes and then eventually you jump on the back of a giant griffin. And it's like you're fighting dudes on a feathered griffin while flying towards the tower in the distance, in which you finally make your way there. And I just feel like they do enough of these like moments where like the structure of the level, the direction the camera moves, the things happening are just kind of cool. Where it's like, oh yeah, this is a neat idea.
I'm wondering as well if it was a bit of a victim, as was Revenge of Deathadder to some extent, that swords and sorcery high fantasy was not really in fashion at the time.
Right.
Well, I mean, okay, since we are blaming now, let me pose a theory. Let's just do it easy. Let's just blame Sega USA. Because, I mean, it's 93, right? This is when they went completely off the rails, went all in with their stupid crap like Chakan and so on, and tried to keep the Japanese stuff out of the States. You know, all the fight about Gunstar Heroes. And I think that's also a victim of that time and that mentality.
I think you're probably right, actually.
I'm detecting some hostility towards the Forever Man here.
This Forever Man can... Well, I don't want to say that on this podcast, but you just read between the lines.
How long can he do it? How long can he do it, John? I think we all know the answer.
He can do it at 30 frames per second, maybe.
Forever.
I beg to differ.
Fair play. Well, you know, well, they give it another good old go on the Dreamcast, and they had this good sense to go, hang on a minute, no,
let's not do this.
No,
Thomas, to add to that, I actually really kind of have some resentment for the Sega Channel itself, because that meant that a number of games ultimately didn't get cartridge releases.
Yeah.
It was,
and
like,
we've only just got the Garfield one. Thank you, Frank. Yeah, thank you.
It was like a preview of what's to come with our digital future. But Sega was doing it way back then. And it's not cool.
Man, I'm glad we didn't have that in Europe here.
Yeah, but you still didn't, well, you didn't get this, but you did get other stuff like Alien Soldier and the
Wily Wars.
And we got Garfield.
Yeah, you lucky us.
It's good, though. I mean, it's flawed, but I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's fine.
Although,
it's okay.
Although the Sequel Wars Mega Man 4 remake is incredible, if you haven't played that.
I haven't played that. I'll give it a go.
That's like one of the best Mega Man-related things I've ever played. I love it so
much. I'll definitely give that a go. That sounds awesome.
Okay, but maybe to get back to Goldeneye 3, maybe one or more, two more points I would like to mention. So one of the things, of course, about the game, it's one of the first games made by a certain Takashi Iizuka.
Right.
Who we might know from Sonic Team nowadays.
That's right. So that's where he came from.
One of the games he came from, yeah. So he worked on that, for example. And, of course, also one thing important, it has these amazing four-armed goatmen. And, I mean, that's one reason to love the game itself.
Good point.
Where else do we have four-armed goatmen?
I'm a big fan of the name Proud Kragger as well. That's very cool. And I got to stress again, I think having a panther guy is really, really cool. Like, it's what Golden Axe has been missing, a big beast man. Like, that's awesome. And, you know, four characters is a pretty good going right there. For a brawler, I think.
I do like that the characters, they have like a split, like the two big sort of burly guys play a little differently than the lady and the panther guy, who are faster and have like more jumps. That they can actually double jump, which is like, okay,
right,
cool.
Right. They have like a triangle jump kind of thing going on.
Right. But all the characters have like a fighting game style move where they can like pull off a projectile.
Oh,
which
wow.
is like, you know, it's a little complicated and I don't know. Again, I didn't have this at the time, so I don't know how well you could pull it off with a Genesis controller, but it's there, you know?
Yeah, I checked if this supported the six buttons, and it didn't seem to, but I wondered if there's shades of Streets of Rage 3 there with the inputs and such, which is cool. It definitely feels like an evolution in that regard. It's just, I mean, I'm going to have to go back to this and really try and get my head around it because I feel bad that I don't like it as much as other folks. I should like things the same way as others, I believe. But it would be great if everyone had the same opinion in general.
Yeah, and I think
Stu's next book, All Games Are Same.
Yeah.
I actually think you had a really good point earlier there, Diamond, just mentioning that there was Death Adder out there. So like hardcore Golden Axe fans, that the types that might have imported a game like this back in the day probably would have played Death Adder in the arcade at that point. Then they were the ones that would set the early internet tone and opinions for a game like this, right?
Yeah.
They're out there on a BBS like, oh man, I imported this and it's not Death Adder. It sucks kind of thing, you know?
So, a curate's egg. I love saying that. God, I love saying that. Would you say it was a curate's egg?
We can say that.
Excellent. I'm so glad. Thank you. Have we got any more to say about Golden Axe 3, or are we good to go?
I think we're good
to
move on. Let's do it.
Okay.
I think we are.
Well, let's move on to the duel in the crown. It's 1995. You have bought a Saturn. You have made a grave mistake. Only kidding. Don't get mad. Golden Axe, the duel, named after the duel mode from the original Golden Axe, fascinatingly enough, rocks up to both arcade and the Saturn, and what we've got here is some trend chasing in the best possible way. I'm being very negative. I'm sorry. I don't mean to. This is an arcade beat-em-up. No, not a beat-em-up. No. God damn it. It was
a fighting
wrong.
Game. Right.
In the UK, it was always a beat-em-up until recently. It's very confusing. This is a fighting game, a one-on-one fighting game starring a bunch of guys who are distant relatives or somehow involved with the characters from Golden Axe. I believe these are all new characters. There is a Gilius in there, but he has a different name. He's Gilius Rockhead. He's not Gilius Thunderhead. I don't know what the story is there.
I mean, the only one returning
Gilius
in a way
must be the family name.
Is Death Adder. He's around.
Heck yeah.
But he hasn't been playable before, so there you go.
But he's not the final boss this time. He's just a
guy. Playable. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is Golden Axe the Duel. I would say a fairly rare and not that well known game in general. Which is a weird because it's got quite a lot going for it, I would argue. Especially visually, I think it looks lovely. I really like the graphics in this. Mm-hmm. It's like a nice halfway house, I think, between like not super anime and not super Western. It's just got a nice look to it that isn't maybe a little bit dated even at the time, I would say, but it animates well enough.
I think that's its problem, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems pretty decent. I mean, I played the Saturn version. The thing that I was surprised by the most is how bare bones it is. Yeah. It's literally just one player or versus. There's no other modes I could see. And I looked to see if I was missing something or if there was unlockables, but nope. It's just that. Which is cool, but it's not an easy sell, you know, to the home audience.
Yeah, especially in 95, of course.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're surrounded by things like, well, I must say Marvel Superheroes or like, many myriad Street Fighters.
Street Fighter Zero, of course. That was amazing.
Yes. So what do we think of this Golden Axe the Duel then? What do we think of this business?
So, John, we played that a while ago together.
We did, yeah.
And I think we had a great time, didn't we?
Yeah, I think it's what I would say, one of those B tier fighting games where there's nothing essentially wrong with it. It plays well enough. The controls are good. There's an interesting moveset. The graphics are attractive. But there's nothing about it that really keeps you wanting to keep going for too long. And it's difficult to explain why, right?
Well, what I found when we played that game is it looks a lot like Samurai Spirits.
Yeah, it kind of does.
The backgrounds are very close.
Oh, yeah.
Good yeah, point. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It plays more like a Street Fighter game, I think, in terms of damage values and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think one problem it had is it never just made any sort of dent in the competitive scene. And of course, the competitive scene is the scene that made Third Strike popular until today.
Yeah, but like for us back in the day, like the competitive scene was like not a thing. It didn't exist, right?
Yeah, I mean, from today's view now.
Right. But even still, like whether a game is played competitively doesn't really make it more or less fun for me because like I don't play at that level. So,
but it makes the game invisible nowadays.
That's true. It does make the game invisible, essentially.
We've got,
here's a question I'd like to ask.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
I have a question and maybe it will prove me, maybe it'll be my undoing. Maybe everyone will turn and laugh at me, but has there ever been a case where you had a beat 'em up franchise like Golden Axe or Double Dragon, just to name two off the top of my head, where because of the trends of the arcade industry, they went from beat 'em up to fighting game, and it worked. Because I feel like Double Dragon tried fighting games, and no one really cared.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to mention.
Golden Axe tried this fighting game, and I feel like market-wise, no one seemed to really care. Like I don't think it's a bad game, but also, like, again, never saw it in the arcades myself. I'm sure I saw it on the shelf, because I was a Saturn owner, but like I'm sure I picked it up, like, okay, I could get this, but I could also get Night Warriors, and I'd rather play Night Warriors.
I wouldn't want to say there isn't one because there are so many goddamn games out there, but I can't think of one.
I mean, Sega was moderately successful with Fighters Mega Mix and bringing the Daytona USA car to fighting games, right? They made the transition from racing game to fighting game.
I was going to say bringing in the Final Fight characters into Street Fighter Alpha 3, but that's quite a long way
off. Oh, dude, another example of a complete failure is Final Fight Revenge.
Oh gosh, yes. Oh dear.
Yeah. See, but yeah. Again, like the Saturn owners really weren't suffering for choices for fighting games.
No, not at all.
Especially if you invested in like a cartridge, you know, the memory cartridge, which you know, for some of the flashier titles, like say, Marvel Capcom.
It was
Street Fighter, X-Men versus Street Fighter.
Yeah, or Street Fighter Zero 3 as well. I think. Yeah.
Right. I mean, I definitely had. I had Street Fighter Alpha 2, which didn't require a cartridge. It just looked fantastic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so great game. Yeah.
Even some of these games didn't even need the port. But if you had the extra memory, you could get some of the, you know, the bigger games that had like lots of character swapping, and that was like, whoa. And you know, this is just an all around solid enough fighter with weapons, but it's also like, you know, the characters seem similar, but they're not actually the characters from the other games. They're just kind of like those characters. Like, here's a barbarian guy, here's a lady fighter, here's a dwarf, here's like another sword fighter guy, here's a big green guy named Green. Like,
yeah, something.
Yeah.
Wait, what color is he?
He's green. He's just green.
He's chicken.
I thought he was dark brownish. Okay.
Like, I thought when I looked at Jam, I'm like, that looks like Cham Cham. Are you like, who's literally, you know, a Samurai Shodown character? So,
yeah,
sure does. I don't know.
It's real.
I guess
I wondered. Sorry, go on. Sorry.
I was going to say one other element that might be hurting it in terms of memories and going back to it. The music ain't great. Like, it's completely fine, but I think, like, even like the mid tier fighting games, like, it's hard to call it mid tier because it plays so well, but like the Street Fighter EX games from Arika are incredibly awesome to play. I mean, they play Street Fighter in 3D, but what really sells them, the soundtrack is so freaking good that every time you put it in, you're like, oh man, like this game owns. I kind of feel similarly to with like Asuka 120%. Those games, not super well known, not big in the competitive scene at all, but the music is so freaking good from Casey Yono that like, you're just like, heck yeah, I'm going to play it. But you put in Golden Axe, it just feels muted somehow. Like this, nothing about the presentation, the sound really makes you go, heck yeah. You don't feel that emotion, which then without the competitive scene, then also keeps you from really having any desire to pop it in.
And this was the same year as, this was the same year as Ultimate MK3, wasn't it? So that was obviously huge in the arcade around this time. So that can't have helped when you'd have the,
The 3D fighters were big.
But I think John just put the finger on it. Everything in the game is nice and fine and okay, but nothing stands out. Nothing elevated above all the rest.
Also, the Saturn port, right? The Saturn port, not that Saturn was huge at the time, but it's the most bare bones thing you can imagine. Like, it's a great port, but it's just the arcade game with, like, basically nothing else except for loading times, which are fine, but it's like, There's nothing here to pull you in and make you say, yeah, this is a home console game.
One little console. Now, I have to admit, I haven't seen this running. My understanding is that you can switch characters for multiplayer before the game loads, so you can save time there. But it's very bare bones, as we said. It really you will be amazed by how bare bones it is. I'm not convinced there's even an options menu. There might be an options menu, but it is like one player or two player versus. There's no, I don't know, training. There's no survival. There's no, I mean, anything you'd expect, really.
You can't even change button configuration.
Right.
Believe that is possible.
And frankly, if you're on the Saturn, I think, you know, you've either got access to imports and Capcom stuff, or you're into the 3D world and you're playing like amazing ports of Virtua Fighter 2 and stuff like that, right? This just doesn't stand out amongst the sea of other fighting games in the Saturn.
If you're a Sega fan, it's worth a look for the novelty value for sure. And you won't have a bad time with it, but you may find yourself thinking, why am I not playing something else?
Like this, I will, you know. There is the one interesting quirk about this, though, that's worth pointing out, is that this game did run on Sega's Saturn Titan video board, the STV, right? Which was, like Sony did with their own boards, an attempt to essentially bring the Saturn to the arcade so that you could put a game in the arcade and then easily port it to Saturn. And it got a ton of games on this board over the years, including
lots of great shmups.
Yeah, Radiant Silver Guns on there, of course.
Mm. Yep.
But there's tons of stuff on there as well. Also that
Funky Head Boxes.
did y'all ever play that Batman Forever arcade game?
Oh, Jesus. It's, you don't play that game. Dude, you just let it wash over
it's
you.
It's one of the weirdest things I've ever experienced.
It's bananas.
Also, if you look up, I have a copy somehow, and I randomly looked it up and realized, oh, this game now goes for hundreds of dollars for some reason, and I don't know why.
Really?
Dude.
Batman Forever?
It's extremely expensive. I can't explain
strange.
It. It's so strange, but that game will melt your brain. It's just strange, but
It's you won't have a clue what's going on. I promise you. It's like Batman crossed with something like Smash TV almost at times. The amount of insane shit that's happening on the screen, or Narc or something.
Exactly. Also, STV was home to the very interesting Astra Superstars from Sunsoft, which was kind of like what if we did like Dragon Ball Z style flying in the sky, just like kicking each other's butt up in the air kind of thing. I guess a little bit like Psychic Force from Taito, where it's like not like a normal on the ground fighting game. But so there was a fair amount of stuff on there, but I think Golden Axe the Duel just ultimately didn't make much of an impact.
I think what we're saying more than once in different kinds of ways. all thinking about different games from 1995 and how much we wish we were playing those games from 1995. And it's like this game just doesn't compare to like a dozen of the games we've already mentioned, which is like, That's kind of like this is the damning reality. It's like, this game is fine, but boy, it's not as good as this or this or this or this or this. And like, the list is just getting longer and longer, and Golden Axe is just falling down and down and down and down. It's just like, sorry.
It would have been, you know, great in 93, maybe. Then I think it would have made a splash, but not in 95.
So, Golden Axe now disappears for well over a decade. It disappears for, what, 13 years outside of re-releases?
I mean, we mentioned the terrible Sega Ages game, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, we did.
We talked about that, yeah.
That's, oh dear, yeah, let's not talk about that again.
Yeah, so let's go to 2008.
2008.
Did Golden Axe have any other, like... Because I know Sega started doing like the Smash Pack and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there was the Backbone port on the Xbox 360, but that may have been timed in with this. I don't know. There were a few releases of this game in like the Smash Pack.
Yeah, so like Golden Axe. Yeah, Golden Axe 1, I guess, showed up in some of that. And
it was on the GBA as well. That's not talking about it either.
So,
yeah, my understanding is that was very bad.
So it's not like Golden Axe completely disappeared, but it kind of went into nothing. No. And I don't even recall rumors about like a Dreamcast Golden Axe. Do you?
It became like a nostalgia property, basically. It just became compilation fodder.
This was the case for so many arcade hits, though. It's not unique to Golden Axe, not unique to Sega, but like so many games that, you know, made a name for themselves in the arcades and then got home ports that made a name that also increased their, you know, recognition. And then all of a sudden, come the 21st century, arcades, you know, especially in America, are almost dead. You know, they're still around in Japan, but like, you don't have the reputation that they used to have. So a lot of franchises just are like, you know, a lot of companies are like, what do we do with this? What do we do with this? Mm. And in the PlayStation 2 era, and then later on PlayStation 3 era, everyone's like, okay, well, what if we take this brand and do this? What if we take this brand and do this? Which is like, you know, sometimes you get creative things, sometimes you get messes. And I think Golden Axe Beast Rider falls more on the mess department because, like, almost all the stories about it are people coming after it and saying, boy, that didn't work.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right.
I mean, I did buy this very late, very secondhand, because I had to know. Mm. And, I mean... quite a lot of the game seems to be sort of focused around the main character's, like, bottom, I found. And whenever that happens, it raises questions. And, looking into this, this was something of a troubled development, wasn't it? This was a very,
Yeah.
The character is just stupidly ugly looking, like, just like, it's just that era of, like, where these guys don't know how the heck to do character models that are decent.
Yeah.
It's really not... I think this is a hideously ugly game.
I didn't think much to it. I didn't really understand why how it got to this point and how it got this bad. It seemed like a very...
I think the monsters are nice.
The beasts.
Characters, not so much. Yeah, the beasts.
So my first...
The ones you ride.
My first thought here, though, is like, you come into this, it's 2008, it's the HD generation. This is one of those games that, along with many others, really showcases what was wrong with that generation in terms of like the game side of things. Just, it runs poorly. The frame rate is extremely unstable. It feels janky as heck. There's screen tearing everywhere. It's all just, it feels half broken. After coming from like the PS2 era where there was so much more fluidity, 60 frames per second was the norm. You know, you play a brawler, this should have been 60 FPS or at least a smooth 30. And it's none of that. It's just a complete technical mess.
I think that era, the PS3 and 360 era, I was talking about this on social media recently. I think for me, it's probably the hardest era to revisit.
Yeah.
Like, really. Using the original hardware, it's like, you go back and you're like, even down to like the UI and everything about using those systems is just painful for me. I'm not saying they have loads of, I mean, there's loads of great games on PS3 and 360.
And the ones that hold up too.
Yeah, they do, but I'd still rather play them on any other system if it's available, like a more modern port or even a PC.
Cases.
Yeah, it's a shame. We're never going to get Never Dead again, are we? It's awful. Awful. But, I mean, Thomas, you claim to like this game, and I respect that.
Like might be a bit much. I played back in the day, and I had a not a bad time with it, I have to admit.
Better or worse than Project Altered Beasts.
Certainly. But, I mean, it has a bit of appeal every now and then. I mean, the fighting can feel nice if you get the parrying and the evading down in terms of timing. It is nice and bloody. I do enjoy a nice heroic fantasy barbarian-style game every now and then. Yeah. So it has a few things going for it. And, of course, I do like Golden Axe, so I went with it into it. And, you know, I also tend to... I like to go against the mainstream opinions. And as everybody hated this game back in the day, I thought, no, let's give it a go. Oh, might not be that bad. Might be okay. Let's give it a go. Let's see.
Yeah, the more people dump on a game, the more I want to play it, usually.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Exactly.
I know that feeling.
But I have to admit, I haven't revisited this one because I haven't got my 360 hooked up and my copy of it is probably buried somewhere, never to be seen again. I haven't gone back to it because my memory of it was just so completely like, as you're playing it, you're forgetting it. Like, it's so whatever. And coming off of, I hate to say it, but after games like God of War, I know it was a bit earlier, but they were still doing them at this time. Mm. It just kind of, I find myself thinking like, I wish they'd copied God of War.
I mean, this was like...
I mean, they did that Conan game that was just right. A complete copy of God of War, right? And that was slightly better.
Wasn't this within a year of God of War 3? I'm pretty sure God of War 3 was like 2009. Yeah. So like, and that's a massive...
God, I hated that game.
That's so much better than this, though.
I think God of War 3 was 2010. But
was it 2010?
I think so. But still, it's in an era where, you know... Again, much like Golden Axe the Duel, like if you want a third-person character action game, you've already got a lot of choices. You know, you've got, frankly, you've got better choices on PS2, but even by this point, yeah. PS3, like people are trying different things, people are trying new things, and here's something that's basically wearing the name of an arcade game from a decade earlier, and it's like, oh yeah, it's Golden Axe, folks, and like half the audience is like, what's Golden Axe? The other half is like, that doesn't look like Golden Axe because it doesn't exactly. Look like Golden Axe. It just looks like, you know, it's very much an emblematic of the era. Like, it's very brown. You know, it's the gritty HD reboot that we all joke about these days, but that's literally what it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's so gritty that Sega didn't even bother to release it in Japan because it's got too much dismemberment in it.
Was the case with, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, John, but the Altered Beast game on PS2, that was Europe and Japan.
That never came out in the US.
I sort of bracket this in the same area as that, although I have to admit, because that's on PS2, I slightly preferred it.
Oh, yeah. Shame we never got that that weird, gritty Vector Man reboot. Good Lord, that would have been something. I actually think the Altered Beast game is more fun and interesting on PS2 than this generic, dare I say, slop on the PS3.
No, I think it's okay to call slop.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. And in this case, I think we have slop, and I feel bad for the developers because they obviously had a friggin' difficult time making it, and it's probably turned out in a form that it was never intended to be.
I have a fun story about that, by the way.
Oh,
a couple of years ago, I was at an event where they showed that Splatterhouse reboot. Do you remember that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Reaching up enemies' asses and pulling their guts out. Amazing.
Yeah.
I talked to the director of that game. I forgot his name, I'm afraid. And talked a bit about the legacy and what do you do to avoid a situation like Golden Axe Beast Rider? Which is a perfect fine question, right? What I did not know is that this guy also worked on Beast Rider before.
Oof.
And now I came across like that generic hater guy. I quite don't like Beast Rider. That was a bit stupid.
Oh boy.
Oh well, it happens.
Did he cry?
I think he could hide it.
That's good. That's good.
You gotta be good at hiding your tears if you work on Beast Rider.
I would like to mention, of course, the other elephant in the room of that game. Because I think everybody who thinks about Golden Axe thinks about two-player mode, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, yeah.
And I mean, it can't have one. It's a genre. It's a single-player action game. But of course, that was for most people the main criticism. Where's my multiplayer
right,
mode?
Right. It's like Final Fight 1 all over again.
And of course, the others appear, right? There is Axe Battler in the game at some later point. There is Gilius as well. But they are just there. They're not playable. And stories go, of course, if they had made a second game, which was, I think, at least in some they thought about, they would have been in there. But yeah, of course, that never happened.
I would say all of Sega's attempts to bring their classic 16-bit IP into 3D were largely unsuccessful at the time, except for, I would say, Shinobi turned out pretty well from Overworks.
Yes, that was nice. Those were cool. Yep. Those were cool games.
It has some issues, but it feels real good to play, and it's just like got a fluidity, and they kind of. But in that case, they really reinvented what Shinobi was, and that made it good on its own terms. And that's
in terms of the IP. I hate saying that, of Golden Axe. We had in this generation, I'm not sure what year, Sega did put out with Backbone. I want to say Backbone. That's Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection.
It was not Ultimate. I beg to differ.
It was not. While it wasn't Ultimate, it was. Okay-ish, if you're not particularly versed in that stuff. But what is notable about that for me is because they did include Golden Axe 1, 2, and 3, they also included Golden Axe Warrior, I think, as a bonus game.
Yep.
So there's a lot of representation for that series out there. People would know what it was if you were into sort of retro. But then they had a chance, really, to get it really kind of back on the map here, and unfortunately it just didn't work. And bringing these classic things into 3D for Sega, as you say, it wasn't easy, but some people may seem to make it look so easy. And they're such good games. It's a shame they couldn't quite get it right. And things like the early Sega Ages titles and such, like, just very few of them worked.
I would recommend people go ahead and look up, I've linked to it in the notes, but go ahead out there in the internet, look it up. Variety published a deep dive into this game on its 10th anniversary in 2018, where they talked to developers, they broke down what the hell happened, and it was just like, yeah, there's a huge story as to why things didn't work. It's not just like they made a bad game. It's like they tried to make one game, they couldn't get that one game the way they wanted it, and then also they had other projects they were supposed to work on. Don't forget, 2008 is the year of the Iron Man movie. Guess what? There was an Iron Man video game made by Sega, and some of the people who were making Golden Axe had to make the Iron Man game. So it's like, whoops, now we're making two games at the same time. So
yeah, that wasn't very good either.
It's a long, as it often the case, when they have a finished print game that just doesn't feel right, just doesn't look right, the answer is they didn't have the time or the money they needed because they were working on something else at the same time, or someone gave them conflicting instructions. Like, there's a huge mess behind the scenes, which led to a huge mess on the screen. That's the story, the short version.
Yeah, and again, that is a reason why I do feel certain fondness of this game.
It's
of course, it's a big mess, but I kind of do like the mess.
You got affection for the mess.
Yeah,
you know, it's the mess. I get that. There are games that are not good that try their hardest, but the problem is I don't think this one does. I don't think there's heart in this game. And that, for me, makes it register essentially as nothing. And I know people worked hard on it. I'm sure they did. I'm not disparaging that. But there are games that I think are not very good, like Castlevania Lament of Innocence, which is boring as shit, and I love it.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty boring.
This is boring as shit, and there's nothing there to grab you. There's no cool music, there's no cool visuals, there's no really cool ideas. It's just a bunch of patchwork rubbish, and I don't like it. It is bad for me. And I think it was developed by Secret Level, and it should have remained a secret. That's my pithy comment for the end of this.
Fair comment.
Unless we have more to say about it.
What a take. Yep.
Yeah, and it was when you say banned, it says here it was banned in Germany, so, you know, good on them. Well done. I'd like to see more countries ban more games that I don't like.
I think it's even still banned today. How about that?
Wow. Couldn't they change the blood into smoke or something?
Yeah, it would have been work, and they didn't want to do that.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, honestly, I don't think games should be banned, but in this case, I'm willing to make an exception. But no, it's a shame, because that, until now, is basically the end of Golden Axe, with only a very brief an also controversial resurgence in 2020 when Sega, I don't remember the reason they did this, but they released a bunch of things on Steam at this, on the same day. There was some like Protos, and there was like the Yakuza Streets of, God, what's it called again?
Kamurocho.
Yeah, that's the one. Kamurocho, which was like a scrolling beat 'em up starring like Kiryu and Majima and stuff. But one of them was Golden Axed. 2020's Golden Axed, which was a, I want to say it was a, not like a vertical slice. I'm sure you know more about this than I do. Cause I did play this and it was a sort of a proto for something that was cancelled or just, what was this? What was the
form? Never went into production, I think.
Okay. So
this was just a proof of concept sort of thing.
Yeah.
I actually did a stream with two of the developers on this.
Yeah. The story behind the scenes is probably more interesting than what you actually got to see, you know, on your screen at home. It came out of nowhere, like you said. They dropped a bunch of stuff, and I think at the time, you know, at first glance, I was like, "Oh, neat! They're releasing some stuff that they normally wouldn't release. That's cool." But the problem was, this thing came out, and even in releasing it, the store description was very punchy. You know, like, "Oh, this is an artifact of its time. It's janky and buggy." Like they're putting that in the description, which got a response from one of the developers, Tim Dawson, who said that he made it in 2 weeks. In 2012, like he was asked to put something together. He worked his ass off to put it together. The executives saw it. The executives didn't like it at all. And it's like, oh, well, they don't know what they want anymore. And then he just figured that was the end of it. And then somehow 8 years later, it gets released on Steam just out of the blue and like basically like being made fun of as being released. And he's like, you know, he was rightfully very angry. He's like, I busted my ass to make this thing. You didn't even want it. And now you're putting it out there and dumping it on me, you know, F you, I believe, is how he put it on Twitter. And it's like,
yeah.
Eventually, they actually did. They issued an apology. Sega of Europe actually apologized to this guy, and I don't think it's still up on Steam. I guess if you still got it, you could probably download it, but I don't think you can find it or search for it anymore.
Yeah.
I thought that was surprising because Sega at this era, they didn't. I think one thing Sega is pretty good at is community. You know, it's odd that this happened.
I think this is just an unintentional. I think the people that probably got this released on Steam just weren't aware of the situation that occurred, and
it's quite possible.
No, I don't think it was malicious. I don't think there's malice there. I think it's
right.
Just
I really don't think there was any malice there. It's just unfortunate in the end. And yeah, like I said, I had Tim and Santana did Android Assault Cactus and Unpacking, I guess. Really cool dudes from Witchbeam. They actually came on with me to talk about this whole thing, and we played through the demo a bunch. And it's interesting hearing about it, like what they were trying to do. But as the story suggests, it's just like when you look at where games were at this point and what was going on, I can see why it's tough. But at the same time, like, this was 2012, I guess, and this was around the time when the same company, this was Sega in Australia, I guess, they were working on the Mickey reboot of Castle of Illusion.
Oh, right? What a great game. What a great game. Oh, my crap.
Same guys, right? That did that. Yeah. That's the one that did this. So, like, I feel like in 2012, there was enough of a push to, like, bring retro-style games back, but I also think maybe a straightforward side-scrolling brawler was not it. You know, like that just wasn't really necessarily going to do it outside of a few unique examples. I mean,
Castle Crashers
was big. I think the Scott Pilgrim game would be well received around that time.
Yeah.
There was
Double Dragon Neon was around.
Way Forward had some brawling.
Yeah.
So I can see why they would attempt to bring it back, but it just somehow, I guess Sega inside just didn't really, they weren't feeling it.
I mean, knowing it was made in 2 weeks, it's downright impressive, to be honest.
I would agree.
I would never have guessed that when I tried it out. It was made that quickly from scratch. That's insane.
Very talented dudes.
So that is a shame, but of course now Sega at the Game Awards 2023, they dropped that really awesome trailer, which promised five upcoming new games, I believe. Jet Set Radio, Shinobi, Crazy Taxi, Street of Rage, and Golden Axe. And we saw little snippets of all of them, right? Like, just tiny little snippets of those games.
Right.
Of course, we're here to talk about, and that was hype. That was like, holy shit, Sega's back. But we're here to talk about Golden Axe, which we only saw a few seconds of, a few short seconds of, and I've looked at those few short seconds quite intensively to try and figure out what this is, then to remember, hang on a minute, this is like probably not going to look anything like this when it comes out, for all we know. But what it kind of looks like to me is that Dungeons & Dragons Dark Alliance game that came out a couple of years ago, except with way more colours and better. And it looks like they're based solely on this brief clips of the trailer. It looks like they might be doing a sort of Arkham-style combat, like, loop thing going on there with the icons above the enemy's heads for counters and all sorts of stuff. So a real kind of more modernized take on Golden Axe. I wish I knew more about it, because I really want to play this. It's one of my most anticipated games, as are all five of those games.
Yep.
Well, I hope it turns out good.
I'm a Sega kid. I love Sega. I want them to do well. Yep. And I really hope that they clean up with it, but we've seen very little, so there's not a huge amount to talk about.
Yeah, not much we can say about it right now, just that it's cool that they're doing it, and I feel like in the modern times, we've seen developers succeed more often than not with this kind of stuff than we did maybe 15 years ago. Like, they get it now?
This is the Sega that gave us Streets of Rage 4.
Right, you know, Sonic Mania that allowed that to happen.
Sonic Mania. Yeah. Streets of Rage 4, for me, as we have talked about on this very podcast, I honestly think it's the best side-scrolling brawler I've ever played. I think it's absolutely incredible.
I agree.
I love 2, but I think...
Wasn't my game of the year 2020, maybe?
I couldn't believe ever that they would make a game that I liked more than Streets of Rage 2, but they did it.
And yeah, it's super good.
It's crazy, so I'm really hoping that this one is good too. And, you know, you'll hear about it on this month in Retronauts, if nothing else. So keep an eye out for that.
One more thing, though, I wanted to, before we start wrapping up, there was some stuff with Beast Rider that we missed relating to Dave Halverson that I think Thomas would like to tell.
Oh, because, good.
Boy, oh, boy.
Right.
There's some stories.
Yeah, let's hear all about our good old DH.
Dave Halverson.
Okay, so what happened basically is Halverson had a magazine called Play back in the day, which I quite like to read because I share many of his opinions about classic games, 2D, and so on. It was a nice magazine, especially for its day. So what happened is he had a big preview of Golden Axe Beast Rider, where he really, really was hyping it up to no end. Mm. Then, of course, it came out, and as we all know, the general press hated the game, players hated the game. But instead of just saying, okay, I disagree, I think it's good, he went on this wild rant about how bad the press has become nowadays. These aren't players, they aren't reviewers, they have no idea about games. He compared it to stuff like Heavenly Sword, which I think he's quite correct in doing so in his findings. But yeah, he had this gigantic rant about how stupid the rest of the gaming press basically is, because they couldn't see the genius in Beast Rider.
I mean, he was right about Heavenly Sword. If you think about the frame rate, it's about the same level of performance.
It's pretty bad, yeah.
No, I think his point was, which I agree to, is reviewers who compare the game to Heavenly Sword are completely off because it's a completely different game.
Yeah,
which I agree to absolutely. Has a very different focus.
I'm not really that familiar with this Dave Halverson chap. But what I have heard about this Dave Halverson chap has made me go,
He's a character, and
That's an ambiguous noise that I will not elaborate
on. Didn't he really enjoy the Atari Jaguar and Cybermorph after...
You could say that, yeah.
I think, in
a certain way, I owe this guy's work, because back in the day, we all imported Game Fan magazine here in Germany, because we disliked the German press, because they were all, 3D is so amazing, 2D is so dead. There's Game Fan, who really championed 2D, and... Basically, that is what radicalized us back in the day, reading Game Fan.
I never had Game Fan, but I have seen it since. I've seen a few issues of it, and the layout, I have to say, of the layouts
wild.
Are, I'm going to say borderline unreadable. And I mean that almost as a compliment. It's like, there is no real, like, uniformity to it. It's just crazy backgrounds, text all over the place. And the enthusiasm does shine through, but unfortunately, being from the UK, the golden world of video game magazines that gave the world CMVG. You're welcome, by the way. I find diehard game fan quite hard going, but I respect that it existed, you know? I respect it.
But yeah, it was definitely, it was an interesting time, and especially this long article, it can be still found online somewhere, I think. It's quite interesting, and I admit I used that also in various English classes, just to analyze the text, to look at his points, and also look at the game afterwards. And the thing most of the students found after they read the text, both of them, the preview and the long-winded rant, and saw the game, okay, so the game isn't as good as he says as he makes it out to be, but it's also not some horrible abomination from the depths of hell. It's okay-ish.
Yeah.
That's what they came up with in the end.
He probably had made some decent points, but I wonder if he was making them in the wrong direction here. You know, if it's not the game really to die on the hill of.
That is what I think.
But you know what? I respect his opinion is his opinion, and he's welcome to his Golden Axe Beast ride. He can have my copy for free, actually, if he's listening. Get in touch. I'll send you my copy. You can have it, mate. Don't worry about it. Thanks for Girls of Gaming. I think that was yours. Well done. That was very very cool of you. that's where I remembered the name from. Oh, boy. Yeah, that just occurred to me. Okay.
That's the guy, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's a real shame. And Golden Axe, right. Golden Axe. That must be a golden wrap on Golden Axe.
May I? I think we have one small part to cover because there have been a few little, tiny, fun Golden Axe guest appearances over the years.
Ah, yes, they have. That's very true.
Of course,
yes.
We have a little bit in the Mega Drive era in Alien Storm, and we have Gilead selling weapons in Shining the Darkness.
Mm.
And he even has a little picture of the gnome thief in his shop, which is fun.
Yeah, do not sell to this guy.
that was pretty cool, I think. And of course, we have them coming back in games like Sega All-Star Racing Transformed, which I love to bits, by the way.
It's an amazing
game.
Absolutely brilliant. I wish they would port it to modern systems on 60 FPS. Yeah. Like, come on, let's go.
I think, John, can't you play it in 60 FPS on the Series X?
Yeah, I was going to say, already on PC, but on Series X as well, it supports 60 now.
Oh, right. What I'd like them to do is make a new version of that game for everything that has all the content from the PC version and everything.
Man, I would kill for that.
But they did do Sonic Team Racing, whatever it's called, and that was nowhere near as good.
No, not.
Didn't care for that.
Yeah. But yeah, Gilead is playable in both the All-Star Racing games, right, I think? Or at least there are Golden Axe races at the very least. I know that there are tracks for it, or at least a track.
Gilead is definitely in Transformed, and there is the Death Adder track.
Yeah, and he's unlockable, as you've said here, in Sega Superstars Tennis, which is a surprisingly good game, I might add.
Yeah, they had some nice spin-off games back in the day.
Yeah, they did.
Does he swing his axe like a tennis racket?
Oh, I wish.
I wish he did. Maybe that might be his superstar move or something.
I'm just saying, it's got that width, you know? It's got a racket sort of general shape. He can just, boom.
Yeah, it does. Yep. But unfortunately, I know that Mario doesn't really care about this, but in Sega, rules are king. This is sport. This is a competitive sport. You know, there's honor involved. And we can't let one guy start swinging an axe around on the court because, you know, the umpire's going to take issue with it. You know, it's going to be a problem. But, it's nice that they have kept sort of awareness of the series up with these re-releases. Now, I mean, yes, the emulation re-releases like Sega Classics, they're not anywhere near perfect, but I think they are okay. I think they are playable. There are ways to play these games if you're not downloading ROMs, which, let's face it, we all are. So it's nice that the energy is up. Part of me hopes that when this new Golden Axe comes out, they're going to find some way to get these games back in people's hands with much better emulation, much more playable.
Yeah, I mean, seriously. If they take away all the stuff right now, there has to be a reason for that, because it's free money having them on Steam.
I know there is a reason based on, I think it's based on them licensing some engine or something that they used for it that they can't use anymore.
Right.
But I mean, it's Sega. Sega have never, to my knowledge, really had an issue with getting these games back on people's hands. So I would be amazed if they didn't turn up again quickly, really quickly, in fact. And let's not forget that trailer for those five new Sega games did end with an "and more." So, you know, maybe we're finally going to get Kid Chameleon. Who knows?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, everyone loves Kid Chameleon.
Or Chameleon Kid. depending on the region.
Or Chameleon Kid, yeah. Or Chameleon Twist, if we're doing that.
Ooh, I'd rather take that.
Yeah, same. There's a lot of classic games still in limbo that I'd like to see re-released. And you know what? Revenge of Death Adder is one of them. So let's go. Let's go. It kind of bums me out that when they did Sega Ages, when M2 were doing them at the end, towards the end of the PS2 sort of era, we never did get a Golden Axe one, a proper Golden Axe one, with all of the Golden Axe games. That would have been incredible.
Imagine a really nice 3D version of Golden Axe. 3D Ages was amazing.
Was there a 3D version of Golden Axe on 3DS?
Think so. Or was there?
I don't know, because if there was, I would have bought that, so I don't think there was, but that would have been really cool, for sure. Because the 3D version of Shooter Rage 2 is incredible.
Yeah, they made one for Altered Beast, but not for Golden Axe.
I don't know what the deal is with them and Altered Beast. I don't know what the deal is. I mean, I got love for it, I got respect for it as nostalgia, but my god, it sucks compared to Golden Axe, or I don't know. But let's draw it to a close there, because we have now covered two episodes. We have gone across the entire Golden Axe series. So I guess, are there any final thoughts on this? So what would you like to see from the new game in particular, or where do you want this to go?
So, I mean, I have one very simple wish. I want them to get down that feeling of knocking the butt of your sword on the enemy's head, kicking it away.
Yes.
If they can nail that, I think they already have a really big advantage over many competitors. So let's get the feeling right.
Yeah. Handle of the axe, bonk on the head. I'm going to just write this down. That's what Thomas wants. John, what would you like to see from this upcoming Golden Axe?
I hope they tackle it from all angles. It needs to look good, sound good, play well, and just be like something satisfying.
Yeah.
And I hope that they understand, the developers fundamentally understand how to make this sort of game right. And that sounds weird to say, but a lot of times, I mean, as we've seen, they don't get those fundamentals right.
Yeah, you know, I have played so many bad brawlers in the recent months.
Oh man, there's so many. It's
terrible.
What, you didn't like the Karate Kid Continues?
No, I didn't.
No comment.
And Diamond, any wishes on your wish list for this Golden Axe redo?
I feel like the time has come. They need to pay the big bucks, pay whatever he wants. They need to get David Caruso back in the studio. They need a new scream from David Caruso, because his 43-year-old scream from First Blood, it's just, you know, it's dated. You know, get him in there. He's still working. Just get him in there. He can do it. He can do it. He's still got it. I'm sure he's got it.
You know, something I've just remembered that we didn't put on the notes is, aren't they doing an animated series of Golden Axe?
Oh, right. That's happening too, yeah.
And it's being made by, I'm trying to remember who made this, the Mike McMahon, who did Solar Opposites.
Huh. Interesting.
I want to put myself out there. I think Solar Opposites is really funny. So I am looking forward to this, but I do wonder if it is maybe doing a bit of a disservice to make it into that kind of show, because it's not really Golden Axe, but if it gets it out there and it makes people want to play the game and it's maybe funny, then I'm all for it.
I mean, basically, after Castlevania, I have a certain trust in these things that they might turn out good. I don't expect them to, but there's been cases now where it actually worked. So let's see how it turns out. And I think Golden Axe is open-ended enough so that it might be fun and doesn't have to stick too close to any anything.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I wouldn't really be into it unless I knew who was making it. And I do like Solar Opposites. I do like that kind of humor. And it hasn't got Justin Roiland within 300,000 feet of it. So I do think it's going to be pretty good. I expect I'll like it regardless of whether it's actually good. You know, it's going to hit my buttons. But it's interesting to see Sega pushing it like this. And you know, overall, it's probably quite a good idea.
It's a good way to get it into people's consciousness again.
Yeah, yeah. But let's hope that all of those games turn out great and we get a complete Sega sweep. That would be for the best, as Nintendo is forced to shut down as a result. And Sega finally wins the console war. That's what I'm hoping for. It's my ulterior motive. But seriously, thank you, everyone. This has been two episodes of Golden Axe-tastic fun. I think we've covered it rather effectively. And I'd like everyone to give themselves a little round of applause. Well done, everyone. Well, that's good stuff. And, John, thank you for doing this. Where can our listeners find you and your work on the internet?
As usual, I'm over on Digital Foundry. You'll find me at Dark One X on places like Blue Sky and whatever. Obviously, Eurogamer.net/Digital Foundry and YouTube.com/Digital Foundry.
And Thomas, same question to you, but with the name changed, Thomas instead of John.
You can find my work, of course, in print in N-Games every month on sale in Germany. You can find my stuff sometimes at Maniac on maniac.de, also in German, and generally my thoughts and rants and whatever on Blue Sky now at Tapir Fortuna, like the animal, the tapir, you know, black and white, weird nose. And Fortuna in the end. I'm about to quit Twitter now because fuck Musk and all its cronies. So yeah, that's a nice thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Diamond, what about yourself? I'm sure our listeners are not familiar with you, so, you know.
Well, I do work a lot of virtuals these days, but generally speaking, you can go to my website, fightclub.me, F-E-I-T, that's my last name, C-L-U-B, that's a weapon that many creatures in Golden Axe wield against our heroes, .me. And yes, I too have abandoned Twitter because Twitter abandoned all sensible humans. So I'm on Blue Sky. But and again, fightclub.me, I linked everything under there. So go ahead.
And of course, I'm Stuart Jupp, and I've also left Twitter because I left Twitter ages ago. I left it before it was cool. And you are listening to Retronauts. And if you've enjoyed this episode or previous episodes or the idea of future episodes, you can join Retronauts at patreon.com/Retronauts, and for there are several tiers, but for a mere $5 per month, which you must admit is an extremely small amount of money, you will get two extra full-length episodes every month. You'll get every weekly episode a whole week early, so everyone will just be like, oh, hey, did you hear the new Retronauts episode? And you'll be like, yeah, I heard it a week ago. Come on. Come on! You'll also get weekly columns, which are also recorded by... who was it again who does those columns?
Was it Parrish?
Yes, it's Diamond. It's Diamond Fight. It's Diamond Fight.
Oh, right.
I knew I recognized Jeeves from somewhere. And you'll also get This Month in Retronauts, which is the monthly community podcast in which I irritate Diamond for 2 hours relentlessly. I think is that a fair way to describe them, would you say?
You're irritating me by describing the show wrong right now. That's what you're doing.
Even right now, I'm on it. No, it's a monthly sort of, it's a rundown of what we've been sort of playing that month, paying attention to that month, and going over listeners' lovely, lovely comments and reading those out on the air alongside other things. It's a nice little packed jumble. It's a jamboree of retro fun with me and Diamond, your favorite hosts. Let's face it, the best hosts, the best ones, let's face it. I don't mean that, please don't fire me. And that's it. Thanks very much for listening to this episode of Retronauts, another episode that I'm very bad at ending. So anyone got ideas for a pithy way to end this episode? Because I can't think of one. That would be a good place just to cut it.
Who can do the Golden Axe scream? Give us a scream.
Yeah, we could cut the scream in. That might be good. Like, maybe cut 4 screams in to simulate us all having been killed. Yeah, that would be great. Finally, sleep. Thanks for listening. Goodbye, everyone.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl. It's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl. Happy Friday. It's Jen. Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts. Like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.